I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 486, Men in Black International.
Sure.
Sure.
Because we couldn't get Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones.
Yes.
Or Josh Brolin back.
You could get a painting of them.
Yeah.
So I wonder how many million that costs use Will's likeness.
Yeah. About the same amount that it costs to put him in Independence Day 2.
I just want to know what this movie's called in the UK.
Men in Black.
Because why is it Men in Black International? It only takes... This is the Men in Black in the UK.
Yeah.
So
I guess she's the international. And she's
she's going international.
Yeah,
the
she's
character.
Going... Yes,
got it.
Yes.
Okay.
So I guess let's go around the table and introduce ourselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. And, of course, our Patreon account at patreon.com/realspoilers. So... there we go.
There it is.
Men in Black. Have at it.
So remember when they were when Chris Lord and Phil Miller were gonna do a Men in Black 21 Jump Street crossover?
Oh, that would have been
you
great.
You had me at Lord and Miller, and then you had me at 21 and 22 Jump
Good
Street.
Lord.
I said it last episode. I think those guys are geniuses. Everything that they've done so far has been fantastic. Their TV stuff's fantastic. Their films are fantastic. I just am so curious what that Solo would have looked like. Enjoyed Solo. Not saying I didn't, but I still want to see their version just because I'm curious. Anything that those guys are attached to, I mean, you've got me at their names, and I think that comedy and the crossover, putting their spin on Men in Black would have been great.
Yep. It would have been
but
better than what
we
got. We
got this, which, okay, really quick. Did you ask for this?
No, don't pin this on me.
Did you ask for this?
Absolutely.
Who
not.
Asked for this reboot or not a reboot continuation? Like
it's a soft reboot because this is basically the same story that it's the Will Smith story from Men in Black 1.
Yeah,
for the most part. Like so, it's a soft reboot, is what it is. They think they've got.
I like Chris Hemsworth. I like Tessa Thompson. I have nothing against the people in this movie, but it's like. Were people? I guess they weren't judging by the box office.
No,
people were not clamoring for this. Like, who was like, "Yeah, Men in Black"? Remember that trilogy of amazing movies? We got to do another one. Right. I feel like this was like an idea that maybe Hemsworth and Thompson had on the set of Thor. Like that would be fun, and there was some crossover with. Is this Sony?
Yes.
Because he did Ghostbusters, which
right,
is Sony.
Right.
And so I feel like it was just like, Chris is like, I've got this teamed up, and what if we work with Tessa Thompson, who I'm working with Avengers stuff? And I feel like it was just this idea, and someone was like, yeah, just do it.
Yeah,
and
<right.
laughs> because it's clearly no one wanted it. It opened to, what, 28 million dollars for what should be a huge summer blockbuster type of movie.
Well, also, I mean, Will Smith in 97... was Mr. Box Office. He was Mr. Summer Box Office.
Mr. July.
Yeah.
Talk about a movie star. Will Smith was a movie star.
Yeah, he was The Rock.
Yeah.
Back then.
I mean,
that's what that... You know, I've tried to avoid trailers for
Gemini.
Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah.
And I'm just like...
Yeah.
I saw one last night. I was like, good Lord.
I don't need to see the trailers. I have. Okay, I'll be at the theater and, you know, I don't watch trailers, but I can't avoid them. I'm sitting there. I sit down and it's playing and I see like a helicopter go through a tunnel and explode into a submarine, and then they're in a rocket ship and they're diving through the Earth's core. Like every scene.
When the Rock uses like a chain whip to pull the trajectory of a freight, like a fighter chopper.
Yeah.
Chopper.
Bring it on.
Why not?
That's exactly what. But so judging based on Furious 8, which I've gone on record as saying, like, those guys are the best part.
Oh, yeah.
Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah.
So when they owned that series and owned it as being ridiculous and that they're superheroes, it's like, let's go. And even in the trailer, like Idris Elba is like,
he's Black Superman. He's a genetically engineered human.
So that I'm excited for. But back to this one. We don't have The Rock in this movie.
No.
We do have two very likable people.
Absolutely.
Chris Hemsworth as this expert MIB agent.
Kind of doofus.
Liam Neeson is his partner, I guess, like the J and K.
They were
partners, and then yes. Liam Neeson gets moved up to the top. And then Tessa Thompson, as a child, has an extraterrestrial incident, and her parents get...
Is that going to come back later in the movie?
Oh, I knew that. Yeah, yeah. Oh, they're cute, but they grow up to be huge beasts. As soon as they got to that island, I didn't see this with Katie. I saw it with Ryan.
Oh, good.
Who really enjoyed it. You know, it's easy to please a 9-year-old with action CG stuff. But I turned to Ryan and I go, that's the pet she had when she was. Yeah. And he's like, he loved it. Because I predicted every twist and turn. I'm like, they want you to think that's the bad guy, but it's really that guy. And he's just like, and then every time it happened, he turned to me. I felt like I had superpowers. It's the coolest thing when you can predict stuff like that, and your kids are like, how did you know? Yeah. Like, you watch enough movies.
Bella has been watching the Harry Potter movies, and she just got to Prisoner of Azkaban. And she's just like, she's like, he's the werewolf. I was like, are you sure he's the werewolf? You want to keep watching this? She's like, oh no, Sirius Black is the werewolf. I was like, is he?
That's the best one. I love it. Yeah, that set the tone really for the entire series.
Yeah, for
Alfonso Cuarón.
Yep. So this one opens up, like Kevin said, with Liam Neeson and Chris Hemsworth fighting off this thing, which would be, you know,
it must have paid a lot for that Paris backdrop.
Yeah, no kidding.
They go right back to the exact same backdrop.
Look, man, we paid $100,000 for that thing.
Same angle, same everything. They're like, if you compare the scenes side by side,
it's the exact same thing.
Is what, 8 years earlier?
Yeah,
or three years earlier, I think. Yeah, because it jumps back 20 years for her.
Right.
And their incident was 3 years.
Wouldn't you want to start with her story and then jump forward and then do another time jump?
They got to catch you off guard with, like, what the hell is going on? But when they go back later in the movie,
I think they were afraid that this movie, if it's not for that opening scene, it goes so long without any kind of action.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Yeah.
You know, even though in that scene, like, the big alleged action set piece takes place off screen.
Right.
You still don't see it.
You have no idea.
When you get to the end, makes sense, but it still doesn't change the fact that you feel like you were robbed of a giant alien fight.
I'm glad that you said that, because when I was in the theater and then it went to the other stuff, I was like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Like, I thought
you got neuralized.
I mean, I wasn't on my phone or anything. I was there with Ryan watching it. But later on, I'm like, what did they do in that opening fight? Like, I seriously was trying to figure out, and I didn't remember that they just cut, because I'm thinking, clearly something happened at the big Paris showdown, and they keep talking about it.
You're right. Something did happen. So, yeah, then we flash forward to Tessa Thompson as a little girl, and her parents are, wrapping Christmas presents. I guess it's Christmas time, but they're all not dressed accordingly. Like, it's, I feel like Christmas time in New York is cold, and everybody's kind of just like, you know, the one scene that I don't know why I laughed at this scene, but I did, is when the dad like goes running at, you know, gives the mom, they hear a crash in the trash cans or whatever. And the dad comes running back in and he just does this weird little slip where, like, I feel like he must have been wearing socks. You know what I mean? Like,
yes, I don't. I think that was
he slipped accidentally,
but then played it off.
Yeah.
Like,
and
he does like a Risky Business slide.
He kind of does, like, slides in there, and then he like catches himself. And I was like, I laughed at that part.
A lot of this movie is improvised. Clearly, that's how they, you know, a lot of the jokes and things. And Hemsworth is known for that on Thor and on what's the one that he improvised?
Ghostbusters
doing his jokes. Yeah. So clearly a lot's improvised. And I think with that, it probably was just all part of the way they made the movie. Like, it happened and he caught it and they're like, yeah, good enough.
And it worked. Like, I don't know. So then the parents go out, they go to call the police. And of course there's somebody at the door already. They go outside. It's the Men in Black. And I was like, well, why wouldn't this be J and K? Or why wouldn't it be J? Or no, Kay with his old partner.
Because they couldn't get Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith.
They could get somebody to do Tommy Lee Jones's voice, because you never see them. You only see them from Tessa Thompson's.
I don't think they paid them any money. You can't do it. Like,
you can't do an impression of somebody?
Did our interview with Jeffrey Wiseman teach
you nothing?
I know,
that's a great point. Yeah. That's a great point.
Yeah, they got paid for three movies. They don't want to pay them for likeness. They don't want to pay someone that looks like someone. Like, they don't want to get into that.
Yeah, but this movie had a budget of $110 million.
You could have paid a guy to do a Tommy Lee Jones voice.
Which isn't much for a movie like this. So, like, I would think you throw $1 million at them and you could get that.
Or something.
That right to do that.
Right.
You know?
Some way to tie that. I mean, there is a picture on a wall of J and K fighting the Edgar bug.
Because I bet you they had to pay him for that likeness. I'm telling you right. I guarantee you.
So
they
here's
had
the
to.
Thing. I don't think it looked like their faces were smudges.
I think it looked like them. You could tell instantly when it showed them.
I guess.
Yeah.
They can't, like, if you didn't sign them for the deal and you're using Will Smith and Tom Lee Jones's, you got to pay them.
Yeah.
Or get permission. But most agents would be like, pony up that dough for
right,
them.
Right, right, right. So Tessa Thompson sees it go down and she kind of runs away before her parents get neuralized. So she does not get neuralized. And then she sees this little fluff ball.
Blue Furby, whatever.
Nerf herder. Yeah. And so she kind of like
triple.
Oh yeah, right.
The
so she kind of like ushers it out and gets it out of there and protects it. And this sets her on this course to get into the Men in Black. So then we flash forward again, and she's kind of this.
I really liked this. I thought with her being this, you know, smart kid that's grown up tracking these things, and she's got all these satellites and things, like, they turned into like a crazy, like, aliens exist person. And I thought it was really fun of her figuring out how to get to the Men in Black, you know, and going on the interviews. I mean, I enjoyed this setup, but it was
I liked the premise better than the execution.
Yeah,
of
it falls completely flat.
Yeah.
And again, because I think a lot of it's improv. It's a lot of tests. I could tell in those interview scenes, it's like they're just improv-ing. And I don't know. You're right. It just didn't work. I think that it maybe could have been written a bit better than improv. I think they used the best takes that they got.
They probably did.
And
who directed this? Do we know?
F. Gary Gray.
Oh, it was F. Gary Gray. Yeah, that's right. And it was just like, whoa.
Which was surprising.
I guess he's found his footing in these big budget, like, you know, smash fests. Because, of course, he did Fast 8. Yeah. So, anyway, she tracks it. She goes to all the CIA, the feds, and they're just like, what secret agency are you talking about?
I thought the accounting line was funny.
Like, it was upstairs.
There was some enjoyable...
Yeah, there are bits and pieces that are fine.
And I like Tessa Thompson a lot.
I do, too. I do, too.
I really like her. She was great in Creed, which was the first time I ever noticed who she was. I thought she was great in the Sorry to Bother You. I don't know if either of you guys saw that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She was fantastic in that. I really like her in more of these... I think she's really good, and so I like her in more of the smaller art house type roles. You know, I think I enjoy her more in that than in a big budget action movie. Now, I thought she was great in Thor Ragnarok as Valkyrie. So it's not like she can't do it, but I just don't know. I mean, in those Thor movies and the Avengers, it's such an ensemble.
She also has a confidence about her
in
those movies that I feel like she didn't have initially. Like, she's always kind of geeking out over the Men in Black, where she doesn't, like, she's confident in her crime solving skills, but like she's also
a fangirl.
She's fangirling the entire time.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is, because in the other world, I like her as the badass, confident,
right,
you know, character.
Take no garbage.
And in this one, it's like she sees Hemsworth and she gets kind of excited. She acts cocky, but then she's like, ooh.
Yeah, kind of googly eyed. I did like that scene with the alien where she's like, the alien can like rewind what she's seeing.
Yeah.
And so she's just replaying Chris Hemsworth walking past her every time.
That was like a funny bit. Yeah. I think there are enjoyable things in it, but I
think that's one of the biggest mistakes the movie makes, though, is that you know, that first movie, like, it kind of like has a lot of fun peeling back the idea of aliens are all around us and we don't know it.
Right.
And this movie really doesn't do that. And when they do it, it's
gross.
It's just kind of retreads of jokes from previous films.
Yeah.
And then there are things that I just don't even understand, how there's this whole underground world of nightclubbing that involves aliens, but where they all look like aliens, but nobody knows aliens exist.
But they want to be like, yes.
What?
I don't like. So I took that as like, there is this weird fetish that nobody talks about where humans want to be aliens. So the Men in Black set up these clubs where aliens can go and just be themselves on Earth, where everybody just thinks that they're humans. Pretending
oh,
to be
there's
aliens.
A thing where did the movie tell us that?
I think it did.
I didn't catch that, but
that humans want to look like aliens.
Yes, there's
that. Even though we don't think aliens exist,
right? There is. Oh. So when Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson are driving to this thing,
yeah,
Hemsworth lays out what this.
I totally missed that too.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if it's in the back of that cab where they drop into the club, or if it's on the way to the thing. I think. Okay. But yes. Hemsworth kind of explains that this is like a club where aliens can come and be okay, not have to, where everybody thinks that they're humans in costume, where they can kind of just be like Comic-Con.
Gotcha.
Right? Like everybody just kind of accepts.
I feel like they should have, that's a clever idea. They should have sold that more. Or yeah, they should have just had him go to Comic-Con.
Yeah.
That would
have
been
right,
funny.
Right, right, right. And they get the gag where you look at the screen and it's like you see people who are aliens. So it's like Elon Musk and Ariana Grande and J.J. Abrams. So that gag comes back around in this one. I think in the first one, like Michael J. Fox, or not Michael, Michael Jackson was like an alien.
They show Donald Glover in this
they
one.
They did, which I thought was like, and she doubles down on the Donald Glover one. She's like, no, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's Pierce Morgan in the UK.
Is that?
They change it depending on where you're. Yeah.
That's funny.
So she sees Pierce Morgan. It's like, that one makes sense. Because they showed a clip of it online. I saw the article going around.
Okay. So she infiltrates, like she's hacked into NASA. She infiltrates where she thinks this alien.
There's like Inquirer magazines or whatever.
Which is,
like,
that goes back to the first one.
Okay,
the first one, the Weekly World News, coming back to Earth.
And
I want my baby. Yeah. So in the first one, Tommy Lee Jones he's buying all of the rags or whatever,
because they're true.
They're true,
yeah, right?
And nobody believes that they're true. So
which is a great gag, which is also yet another recycled joke.
They go back to Frankie. Like Frankie's a recycled joke. And the problem that we've talked about it a million times is when that first one is all practical, like all of those aliens, all those effects, with the exception of when they shoot Tony Shalhoub's head off, and But all those aliens that you see walking around MIB, that's all practical stuff. Yeah. So when you go heavy on the CG, like it does take.
The CG didn't bother me at all. I was thinking, when I was watching it, I do agree. But in my mind, I'm like, wow, they've really built this franchise up a lot since what it used to be. And I thought they put a lot of detail into designing the world of the Men in Black. Like, to me, the CG was really well done. And I was more impressed with the big picture that they came up with for MIB International and all these different systems of travel and all that.
There wasn't a Balchinian, which is a joke from the second movie. I'm not even making that up, where Will Smith can't figure out how to knock this guy out. And somebody says he's a Balchinian, and he hits him in the chin, and that's where his balls are.
Well, thank goodness that's a real thing. I didn't need that one in this one. So I enjoyed it, but overall, I just felt like the movie was really boring.
It is very boring. Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, again, the premise I thought was really interesting, and her being a part of the MIB, but it's like once she signs up, I mean, she sneaks in there after seeing the alien come to Earth, and they followed that car with the alien to MIB headquarters.
She changes clothes into an MIB suit.
Yeah.
And she sneaks into the, it has to be the same one that Will Smith walks into.
I'm guessing. It looked like this.
Yeah. You've got Frank the talking pug, who is back in this one for a.
Oh, I didn't think it was the same dog.
Oh, I just took it as, I mean, it's the talking pug in Men in Black 1.
What?
So I assume, yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, I just didn't think it didn't, maybe
it's
I
a great. It's a great
it
line
all,
when Tommy Lee Jones is shaking the dog. He's like, no, it's fine. He owes my buddy some money.
Yeah, and I didn't know that was the same dog. It looked different to me, but I guess I'm assuming it's not the same dog, but it's been 20 years. I'm saying character. I didn't realize
I thought
that,
it was the same character.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just didn't care. I don't care about this franchise. I hate to tell you, I have no love for this franchise.
I love that first movie.
The first one's fun.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know that this is the sort of franchise where fan service is really going to pay off for people.
Right.
I'm just like, I don't care.
I don't want your life. But I totally agree. Okay. Like, it's not a franchise. Like, that first one is great. That first one's a fun summer Will Smith vehicle. Second one, not good.
Yeah.
Third one,
I really enjoy the third one.
Because Brolin does that's Brolin's movie.
Yeah.
Like Brolin killing it as Tommy Lee Jones.
That's great.
And Jermaine.
Oh, yeah. Jermaine
Clement
is the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's actually one of my favorite Bill Hader impressions is when he's doing Andy Warhol.
Oh, yeah.
And it's great.
All right, so back to this.
Can we talk about the other ones before?
No, we got to get into this one.
So she shows up. She sneaks in. Emma Thompson kind of says, like, no, you're out of here.
And
she
didn't realize that this was, like, an Emma Thompson cameo.
Yeah.
Like,
it's weird because they're related, right?
They are related. Yeah. Yeah.
The Thompsons?
It literally took me a second. I was like, who's related?
Well, you know, I feel like in the advertisements I have seen online, they always show Emma Thompson.
Yeah.
And yeah, then she's in for a cup of coffee.
She filmed a day. Like, yeah. She went in.
I don't know. This is the kind of movie where she could have been on the set for 6 weeks, and it's just there was so much retooling and post that would not surprise me.
That's possible. And I don't mean she doesn't do anything, but it's like, seriously, Tessa Thompson shows up and she's like, wipe her memory, and she's like, no, I saw this when I was younger.
I know what that thing is.
Convinced her not to.
Yeah, right.
And then all
of a sudden, if I was good enough to find you,
right,
you should hire me.
And then all of a sudden, she's like, let me think about it or whatever. And then she goes to her computer and she has 2 weeks of test results. Like, it jumped around really weird.
Well, yeah. I can give that as like, she has all the results from the
other
and the
government.
CIA.
Yeah. Test maybe
yeah.
I took whatever. It as like they literally jumped into 2 weeks later, and then they're like, okay, you're approved, but maybe it was just bad editing.
But I agree. I felt like I liked what they're doing here, and I liked the setup of like they kind of have to hire her because she's the only person who's ever found them,
right?
So she must be really good,
which is just like the Will Smith thing.
But I don't remember. I thought they found him.
So yeah, they recruited him.
He chases down a dude, and they're just like, you chase down a what's a butt on foot. And he was like, well, yeah. So they bring him in, but then he does all the testing. But, like, he's sitting there testing with all of these, you know, CIA, Marines, all these guys. But he's the only one that, like, pulls the table over to fill out the test, where he's the only one that shoots the girl in the head. And they're like, why'd you shoot her? And he was just like, well, I mean, that guy's doing a pull-up. That guy's got a handkerchief in his hand. She's got 4 books for, like, thermophysics.
Yeah, he was really skilled and had natural talent. But, I mean, she figured out.
Yes,
she saw through all the BS and figured out that the Men in Black are a real thing. And a real outfit, and then infiltrated.
Yes, that is correct.
You know, they went out and found him, essentially.
Oh, that's okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And so I liked that setup, but I also felt like they got to it so fast that you didn't get to enjoy it. Like,
I would have much rather had this movie be about her, just more her climbing the ranks, rather than getting thrown into a top agent assignment. And
as a probation officer, just, like, you're going to go
I feel
check
like
out.
This was a leftover script.
I think you're
like,
right.
They were like, oh, if we did it, like, I feel like when they did Men in Black 3, that they wrote 2 scripts and they had the time travel one. Like, they had the, like, here's what we'll do if we can get Tommy Lee Jones for a whole movie, and here's what we'll do if we can't.
I could see that. And, or they said, here's 3, here's 4.
Or that.
Yeah.
And that they, and then this has just been sitting in a drawer, you know.
I could see this being.
And my other theory, which I think is probably even more likely, but I can't remember which studios were involved, but could this have been RIPD 2?
Oh, jeez.
I mean, I never saw the first one.
Yeah, you did.
No, I didn't. I was not on that one.
Okay, I'm like, we did it.
I know we did it.
Oh,
but
that was
bad. I think your theory about this being a Men in Black 4, I could definitely see this being they lose Tommy Lee Jones.
Right.
They get Will Smith for one more movie, and this is their way of introducing the new MIB with Will Smith being the Rip Torn character.
I'm of two minds, because I'm like, on the one hand, I'm like, I don't think Will Smith commands the kind of money he used to.
Not now.
But he probably does for a Men in Black movie.
Absolutely. It's
and
his
that,
franchise.
And that last Men in Black movie, even, you know, it opened to $54 million.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'd...
$20 million than Dark Phoenix.
They would love that.
But now they wish they gave him that $20 million.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's the thing. If you can elevate the movie, I mean, like, that's a lot of money. Well, would you like to make a lot of money?
Yeah,
right. And you could have him as the Zed character, you know?
Yeah.
And have him...
Something.
Yeah. Yeah, so she goes and she... Emma Thompson kind of says, I want you to go to the London office. They got this thing going on.
That's where they go to train, I guess. Where she went to... She's supposed to be training.
I never picked up on that. Is that she was just
She says that there might be. She says there might be something weird going on, so keep a lookout
in
the London office.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure she was there as a probation officer
to do her training.
Like, that's, I guess, send them to go train or whatever. But I think she's also there to look out for whatever.
Right.
Because she knows how smart she is.
Right.
And the other thing is, too, that we didn't mention, Emma Thompson, I think really pulls the trigger on her, because she has no attachment. She has no family. She has no, you know, no boyfriend, no relationship, no job that she cares about.
No, like, animal.
Yeah. So to erase her, which they do, you know, they erase her from the system. It doesn't take a lot. And she clearly, she says she wants to find out how the universe works. So you've right. got someone that, you know, it's not going to be hard to erase. And you have someone that's a go-getter that and is smart. And so she, you know, ends up welcoming her. She does her tests, and then they send her off, as you said.
Right.
And then meanwhile, now we don't know why, but it cuts to Chris Hemsworth. And here he is 3 years after the Paris incident. And he's like a schlub. He's like,
he's kind of a dope.
Yeah. You know, he's supposed to be a top agent that did this amazing stuff, or you see he saves the world. And now he's like a goofball at this underground poker right. game.
Yeah. And he's, you know, he's doing the Hemsworth thing. It's the opening scene with Surtur. Where it's just, you know, talking quick and trying to, you know, find out the guy's like, I don't like Men in Black. He's like, yeah, who would like those guys? They're dicks. And then, of course, a big fight ensues. And this is, I did like this scene where the gal was, he gets bit by this weird snake. And then the other guy gets bit by the snake. And Hemsworth is like, I'll do anything. I'll give you anything you want. Just please give me the antidote. And the gal was like, anything? And he was like, anything.
And I like when he wakes up with suction marks on like a tentacle.
Yeah, when she lifts his arm. I thought that was great.
That was a good guy.
But now they're turning him into Kirk. Like, he's James T. Kirk, where, you know, Kirk would just sleep with whoever to, you know, because Kirk didn't care.
No, he's Kirk's dad.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, he did play Kirk.
That was what Star Trek IV was supposed to be. It was supposed to be time travel, and it was supposed to be Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth. He goes back to, like,
oh, really?
They were supposed to both be in Star Trek 4.
What? Did we get to Star Trek 4?
No. Well, it's going to be Quentin Tarantino now if they greenlight it. But
wait, what?
That's Quentin Tarantino wrote this. Well, no, he said the script's done. It's not greenlit yet, but Quentin Tarantino, they're courting him to be director. It's going to be rated R, and the script is finished.
My God. Yeah. That, it's almost
he's been
like
wanting to make this years movie for
ago,
years.
It came up that
like... I don't even know.
We got to get back to this one, but that is a thing.
Okay, I would have loved to have seen.
But Hemsworth and Pine was supposed to be, because he dies in the first one.
He dies in like the first 5 minutes.
They're supposed to go back in time, and he deals with
them. It's funny, I remember when they announced Thor, like they were just like, oh, yeah, it was the guy in Star Trek. And I was like, Chris Pine? And they're like, no, the guy that was in it for like 3 minutes. And I was like, oh,
Blake
Lord.
Told me that, too. They're like, that was who played Kirk's dad, like, because no one knew him back then.
Yeah, he was brand new. So he's kind of like this. I mean, he's like Kirk, basically, is who he's like.
He doesn't really care. Like, everyone else is
he's
doing
living
that
off
MIB
his
thing.
Reputation.
Yeah, he's coming into work late, and he's being a goofball.
Well, I also feel like the screenplay hints at this, but I don't feel like they really explore it as much as they could. But I also get the vibe that, like, the government has kind of gotten in bed with aliens.
Yes.
And that they're not hunting them as much as they are trying to placate them.
The guy who plays one of the Andes from Hot Fuzz, who's Agent C, he's one of the Andes in Hot Fuzz, says that.
Yeah,
he's like, you're just a babysitter, like you're taking care of their puppies. And I like their back and forth.
Yeah,
where he's like, you'd love to.
And
I
would have liked to see more of that aspect of
like what the government has gotten.
Yeah, how the government has kind of pushed out,
right,
and is more about like, well, let's just keep them happy. That's the easiest way to deal with
they
it.
They won't blow us.
That's
up.
What the government would do.
Absolutely.
You know. Yeah. Well, let's just write them a check, and then everything will be okay.
I thought it was interesting. The one thing about this world building, if you want to say there's something here that, not that I care that much, but the fact that the head of MIB UK was High T. Like, because I'm like, there's only 26 letters, so how do they all have letters?
Yeah.
But I guess they then have, like, High T, and they do different.
That's new, because, like.
Well, I know, but that's why I had never heard.
She was O.
I just thought it was a British joke.
That's what I thought, too.
Like, High T.
But one is C, and one is A.
Yeah,
but
one was Z.
But, like, High T is when you have, like, you know, I just thought it was a T joke.
That's what I thought, too.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think there's a joke there, but I just thought it was interesting that
it was a British joke.
Because haven't we always wondered, like, what happens when they run out of letters, though? Like, that I feel like they do different takes on it. So I don't know. I thought it was, I was looking for something to be interested by in this movie.
And letters was what
letters
he
is where
on.
We were, yeah.
So he shows up late, and Tessa Thompson.
We go into the office, and then we look around the room, and there's J and K fighting the Edgar bug. And then there's the, you know, Paris, where I fought him off with only my wits and my Series 7 de-atomizer, which is funny. Like, it's one of those things where it's just like, that's how he would, when we get to the end, you're like, oh man, why did I not pick up on that? Where it's, I was just thinking it was, you know, when you like you get around like some old cops and they just tell their stories over and over and it's the same details. That's how I interpreted that until you get to the end. You're like, oh, that's kind of
slick. It definitely seemed it was, but it seemed off to me. So there, I think they dropped hints and because he said it the same way. I think he's supposed to.
I think to me the big hint was when it's on the picture.
Yes,
on the the painting.
Right.
It's on there that way. And
it
I'm just like,
you could read that as a joke.
I took it as a joke as well. That it's like, oh, that's exactly how they tell this story. It's so he said it so many times. It's in scripture.
Right.
But
right.
So, but she sees him show up and like, who is he?
And right.
He's
and
the
then
best agent.
We yeah. Woo. And then so. She kind of, you know, he's, I do like where he's like laying there and he's meditating. In other words, he's sleeping at his desk.
Her line was good. I like that a lot. Your tell is when you meditate, you snore. That was a good
So yeah, she kind of throws down like a dossier. Basically, he's like, oh, good. Just what I wanted to read. So finally he says, you know what? You can come with me. You can be my second on this.
He doesn't work with partners. He's a solo agent. They all work in partners except for him. And we come to find out
there's a reason.
Yeah. But so he's like, well, after all, I will take you. She talks up like she knows this alien language and she's a fan of the guy that he has to babysit. And they also mention that the only reason why they're taking this guy out to the clubs and stuff is it's like they'll just blow Earth up. Like apparently Earth is
The Earth is so insignificant in the grand scheme of things that like they'll just grind us to dust.
Yeah.
They don't even care.
So they'll take this guy out for a good time, whatever, because they kind of have to.
Right. They go to the alien club. We should say there's also these two other aliens that have shown up that kind of can take on the form of anything.
Yeah, they're
else.
The guys from Dark Phoenix.
Yeah, right. They do hit the effect is very similar to like see I saw these back to back.
Yeah.
So the effect of these two aliens with the Dark Phoenix
that's
of
funny.
The Phoenix
it's like an astral type of
basically.
Thing. So it's like this astral entity and then they take over the person's body and I guess they ended up duplicating. I don't know if it was real twins in real life, but
I mean, it looked like it.
I think it is. Some
It looked like they did it practically, and they had a different hairdo to show who was who. But they just take over the body, and they duplicate. So now there's these two guys that are after this alien dignitary.
Right.
We don't know why yet,
right.
But they end up showing up to the club, and they essentially kill him. They, like, take him out.
They hit him with, like, this... It wasn't a poison. It was almost like a knockout dart.
They tranquilized him,
right.
And then they're trying to kill him, and that's where Tessa Thompson and Hemsworth have to
fight them. Yeah, so the big, a cool fight, very similar to the first time that Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones used their weapons for the first time on the spaceship. I do like that they do the one throwback is where they give Tessa Thompson the noisy cricket, and she's like, no.
She takes the huge
Which I enjoyed that. Yeah. Like, that was fine.
But so in this one, it's like nothing's killing them, and he keeps saying, like, check this, check that part of the car, and guns just come out from every...
I enjoyed that. Yeah. So they blow up the one car with the dignitary inside. Hemsworth kind of runs over there, and he grabs his hand, and he was like, there's something different about you.
Like, why did they have to, like, hit him with the dart if they were just going to blow up his car?
That's a great point.
Like, why not murder him?
Well, that's the thing.
He's going to leave the club eventually.
They weren't going to murder him. Like, initially, like, they say they just wanted the weapon.
Right.
But you're right, because like, they were just going to knock him out and take it.
Yeah.
But then I guess when they realized that wasn't going to work, they were just going to blow him up. But then if you blow him up, you blow up the weapon, too. It doesn't matter. Like, it's a massive plot point.
Yeah, why not follow him to the hotel and steal it and then blow it up when the men in black are at a club? You know, the plan is terrible.
No. So Tessa Thompson kind of walks up, and he gives Tessa this little, like, purple and silver cube thing.
And that's also, I guess we should say, the reason your first clue is to something is off about Hemsworth is that this guy says you're different. And we know that incident in Paris went down 3 years ago.
Right.
And so this guy hasn't seen him since that. And he's like, you're different now. So you're led to suspect something is going on with Hemsworth. We don't know if he's under someone's control. We don't know if he's been taken over. Like, we don't know what it is, but there is something up with this.
Because they do say that this creature that they fought off in Paris is called the Hive, and they infiltrate and they... like destroy things from within.
Yeah.
So, you know,
so you're, honestly, I think you're supposed to think maybe he's been infiltrated somehow or whatever.
Right. Which is why he's kind of dopey this, you know, after the incident. And then do we get to the desert? Is this where we go to the desert?
So
that's John Wick.
Yeah.
So
no
they,
kidding.
So they go to, they're called in because, so the MIB shows up and and droves.
Right, right, right.
And they try to kill those guys, and they blow up the whole street trying to do it.
Sure.
And I think, don't they just, like, pimp off?
They hit them with, like, a missile or something. And they
but
go,
they just, they're just
yes,
out of there.
Out of there.
And so then they're called into Hi-T's office,
right,
because, you know, C is like, he's going to have your asses.
Sure, sure,
and,
sure.
And this is like, I should neuralize you right now because it's like you violated whatever thing.
Right.
And they convince him, they're fast talking, like,
okay, that you're okay, yeah, this is what it is. They go to, they talk to, like, the crime lab person down there, and then Hemsworth kind of steps in. He's like, oh, by the way, C, you're off the case. Your kid, you're with me.
Yeah.
We're going to go.
Well, yeah,
they realize that they have the dart, yeah, and the thing, he takes like a big whiff of the dart, and Tessa Thompson's like, that's a terrible idea. Like, it's almost like in old 80s crime movies where they would, like, cop movies where they would, like, lick the drugs.
Yeah.
You're,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
why would you do that? What are you doing? That's not a way. That's not how that works at all.
But T sends Tessa Thompson to be with C.
Right.
And then Hemsworth, who is like, give me one more chance or whatever. And T is like,
fine,
just go away. No, he's like, just go away. Like, you're lucky I'm not firing you.
Right.
And
right,
so then he decides that he'll come and lie and say, hey,
you're with me.
Yeah.
So they go. This is where they meet Kumail Nanjiani's Pawnee.
Yeah.
This is so, like, they've already, you know, all of his people are already dead. They have this go between, but, like, and he's this little, like, pawn looking,
they're like
thing,
chess pieces basically, and they're trying,
yeah,
to protect the queen,
right,
and they've all been slaughtered except for him,
right, and then of course he becomes the comedic, mm, relief throughout the rest of this thing. And it's like, I just saw the trailer for Stuber and I was like, yeah, okay. Like, Kumail Nanjiani, I think, is very funny.
I mean, I think he's responsible for 80% of the laughs in this movie.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also think it's like they're all post-production, too. Like,
I agree.
They added them in when they needed to.
Oh,
they,
sure,
it was like,
sure,
cut to little alien and then, yeah, say something,
well,
funny. And
there are times when he's not even on screen,
yeah,
and but he has a line.
Exactly.
Commenting on what they're doing.
Right.
He's funny, yeah, enough to actually make that work and improve,
yes,
the movie, where in other movies it could be like, you just 80-yard this crap jokes.
Yeah,
in it.
Right,
I mean,
right.
I could tell that's what they were doing. It's just, but it was funny, so I was,
yeah,
like, okay,
sure,
because he's a funny,
yeah,
guy. He's very smart,
right?
Yeah.
So, so now they're trying to trace. This is where they figure out. This is so now they've got, they're in, like, nondescript India. This is where we get the one weird scene with the guy whose beard talks,
mm-hmm,
like his beard comes off, and they steal his motorcycle.
They borrow it.
They steal it because to borrow it means you have to give it back.
Well, they planned on it.
Did they? So they go, you know, this is where they go. Somehow they get transport. I don't know.
So C is on to them,
right,
and
right,
sends,
right,
all the MIB without Hi-T knowing.
Yeah.
And so this is where, again, you're supposed to be like, well, he's the bad guy trying to get the weapon for himself.
Right. He sees the alien give Tessa Thompson this little cube.
Yes. So he sends them all to track them down. They know that they've stolen alien weaponry.
Right.
And so they're trying to recover it. They have a big chase on the motorbike, cycle,
sure,
whatever you want
and
to call
she,
that thing.
She pushes like a weird button.
And they actually warp.
They
say it's hyperspeed or something. They actually travel.
They hit a portal and they travel, yeah, to the desert,
yeah,
and this they get pissed off. We get
yeah,
typical.
I,
blah,
yeah,
blah, 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 blah.
One yells at the other.
I do like where, like, they're talking through Pawnee.
Yeah, and that was funny. Like the, yeah.
And then they decide, you know, they fix it. They realize that this thing is a weapon, so they unearth it, and it's like it fires the, I don't know, it's a blue star is what they call it. So it's shooting like this massive.
And literally they've harnessed a star in a rifle. And
right.
So they're shooting out the energy of a star.
And I do like the line where she shoots, it's in the trailer, unfortunately, where she basically blows the Grand Canyon,
yeah,
into this desert. And they're just like, you think anybody's going to notice that? He's like, oh, the giant hole that hasn't been,
yeah,
there before. Yeah. I think they're going to notice,
yeah,
that. So, they get back on the bike, they fix the bike, they take off, and then,
it's stolen. So they have a bottle of water and the beard alien
talks.
He pops out, grabs the weapon,
and steals
and
it.
It's like, I'm going to take this to, I don't remember.
RZA.
RZA, yeah, because they have RZA, because I'm like, wait,
and I was
RZA's
like,
in
the RZA's in this movie?
And he's playing RZA?
Well done.
Yeah. But
so, yeah. So
no,
they,
it's Rebecca Ferguson.
Which was, I didn't realize it was her until about 3/4 of the way through this scene. I was like,
oh, really?
She looks so familiar.
Yeah.
And then finally she's
Mission Impossible,
yeah,
baby.
Right, right.
Or she, The Greatest Showman.
She should be the new Black Widow.
She's cool.
Yeah. Or the one that the Black Widow has to fight. In
oh, there
the
you go.
Prequel.
Bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was really cool. And was it 5 that she showed up the first time? Or was it 4?
No, 4.
Because five
no,
and
five.
Six.
It's
yeah,
five.
It's five.
It's
yeah,
five.
Like, yeah. She's awesome.
Yeah,
that.
She's great. Now she's a part of that team. So
yeah. So now, so she's this.
We're talking about Mission Impossible, just for the record, like for the listeners out there. We're just like, eh, five, six. Seven. I don't know.
I
which one
I said
she's...
MI.
Oh, I don't know.
So she's this arms dealer, and everything, all these deals go through her. And this little beard's like, well, I'm going to take it to her.
Right.
And
that they allude that there's a past relationship. And I do like, it's an interesting point where like Hemsworth is like, you've never loved anybody, have you? And Tessa Thompson's like, well, no, like relationships are complicated and that complicates things. Like when you're it's just chemistry. Like that's all it is. There's nothing else to it. And he was like, OK. And like, so they sort of hint that there is an attraction between the two, but they never deliver
since she saw him. There was.
Well, because we're going to get that in like.
Right, yeah,
and like the next three movies.
Yeah,
we're
gonna
see that play out.
Right, that makes sense.
But I mean, ever since she sees him in the office and that alien does the slow motion thing, and then he agrees to let her go with him, remember? And she acts excited, she covers it up, and then she acts excited.
So I felt
again,
like she was just excited because she gets to work a case, but I guess you could say.
I took it as kind of that he was
dreaming.
So they
devise this plan where he's gonna go meet up with RZA again and say that he has quit MI or he's been kicked out.
Pink shorts?
I don't know, but
I think to prove that he's not in Men in Black.
Yeah.
Oh.
He's like,
no, that's what they say. I just thought it was funny when they're like, why are you wearing pink shorts?
Yeah. I did enjoy that. So he goes in and Tessa Thompson's like scaling up the side of a wall to, you know, sneak in or whatever.
I hate stuff like this because it's like, look at their insane security they have, except for when she needs to climb up on the wall and get in there.
Yeah, right, right.
Like, they have that type of security where there's, like, laser cannons aimed at him as he's walking up the...
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, and you see them on the side of the building, but yet she's just that good.
She's that good. Yeah, she can get in. So they have a thing, and he is going to... His parlay, basically, is he's going to give RZA this last being of this race that has been eliminated, which is Pawnee. And, you know, that's his in. And then she's like, you know, kill him because, you know, you show up on the one day that I get the most powerful weapon ever.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So they throw him out. And this is where he breaks into like the.
And of course, he takes out all the aliens that look like humans.
Right. Yeah.
And like,
you know.
It just all seemed very weird and very lazy, didn't
it?
Like, they're all aliens. But yet, OK, so they're these armed guards are walking him back to the boat, and then he's like, aha, and pushes them in the water, and then that's it. Like, are they dead now? Do they melt in water?
What
like,
happens to the water?
It wasn't that impressive of a fight. He literally pushed them in the water. Like, get up and go blast him with your aliens. You know, it seemed very silly the way that...
Oh, it was very silly.
They got around to these.
Yeah, so Hemsworth turns off the security. Tessa Thompson gets in. They both end up back. He ends up... Tessa Thompson has a really good fight sequence with RZA. Chris Hemsworth gets beat up by the big blue guy who's not Beast. And then they drag him back upstairs. And then this is the reveal where like he's a flarfin or whatever.
Because earlier in the movie, I think I mentioned it, but they literally, the Men in Black are like, yeah, you don't want to mess with them. They may be cute and cuddly now, but they grow up to be huge, angry beasts.
Right.
And then you see this guy.
Here it is. Where she kind of looks at him and she says this one phrase that they'd said to the other, you know, that they said to each other when they were little.
I did like this joke. What does that mean? Well, that means that I will kill whoever you say that word to in the most agonizing fashion or whatever. It's like, let's just, maybe we
don't do that.
See, I was really hoping that as they were walking out, you would hear like screams and like,
right. Yeah. So
because at this point, if you don't kill her, you've just betrayed the biggest arms dealer in the like universe.
Yeah, it's not good. Not good.
I figured they had to address that either by him.
Or that guy joins them.
Or one way or the other, but they left with him and her there, and then they don't ever address the killing. So
no,
you're like,
never.
You can't not do, I don't know.
No, it was not.
Whatever.
No, it was very poorly
It'll be
done.
In the next movie.
Sure it will. So they, you know, the RZA, not the RZA, the blue guy turns on RZA, and of course, you know, they get away with the weapon. And then MIB show up where they are.
And this is where you get the clearly like not even ambiguous happy ending where High T shows up and he's like, oh, well, thank goodness that you got the weapon. And I knew I could try like, you know,
well,
and
those
then,
two guys show back up and they have developed weapons to kill them.
Yeah.
And she's like, we need, you know, they say we need the weapon for for the hive.
Oh, okay.
So
I totally forgot about
that. Yeah,
those,
they show back. They kill those two things. Yeah. They turn the weapon over to High T.
Because High T brings a gun. You just have to have a big enough gun to kill him or whatever. And then it's like, you know, celebration and you, like there's a press conference, not really. But, you know, you're like, sure. Oh, happy ending where you know it can't end. This isn't it.
They go to the party at MIB.
There's still 30 minutes left.
Right? Yeah, right. They go to the party at MIB and they're all standing around and like Hemsworth and Tessa Thompson are both kind of like, this is wrong, right? Like they both agree that this is not okay. Like something is wrong. And then this is where they team up with C, and C's like, look, man, like this is something is going on here. And I've been doing algorithms, and they figure out that the High T is the problem. They figure that out. So they're like, where would he go with this weapon? What could he do?
When they go to check out the weapon, she's like, I can't do that. Oh, yeah, I'm a senior age ball. She's like, no, it literally, it's not
and
here
the
anymore.
The case files have been deleted.
Who has the access to delete case files?
Right.
Oh, like it was so bad the way this was written. Right. The detective work, I'm using air quotes, that they do.
Sure.
I just thought that was terrible when they all came to that conclusion.
Yeah, not the greatest. Then.
And the thing is that if the stuff, like you don't come to a Men in Black movie for the intricate plotting.
No.
Right.
And the fact that you're taking the time away from the movie to dissect that means it's not working.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because if the other stuff was funny, you wouldn't care.
Wouldn't care.
It's all you come for the comedy and the action. If the other stuff was working, you're like, okay, yeah, it's dumb. Well, who cares?
Absolutely. Right.
That's not what we're here for.
Right.
But because you don't have any of the other stuff, then of course you're going to sit here and pick it apart.
Right.
And
exactly.
It's not like I tried. I just, in the moment,
totally.
I'm like,
I mean,
that,
I was doing
like,
the same
I'm
thing.
I'm like, that was terrible.
You could pick apart the first one if
they
you wanted
so
to.
They so quickly do this detective work to figure out it's High T. And it's not even like, they could have just showed someone getting away with it. Or they could, the person could have said, no, High T checked that out. Like, they didn't have to go into that.
Right.
You know what I mean? They could have easily explained that he had taken it and got
Why
away with it.
Why would he even check it into evidence? Why wouldn't he just take it?
Yeah,
I mean, like
to make it look like
I
it was
guess.
Being turned.
Well,
in.
I think it was a local critic, Jim Tudor, who had a great line. I don't normally read other people's reviews, but I don't know why I clicked around this on his. And he had a great line where he said that the film had a Scooby-Doo economy of villains.
You ain't kidding.
Or of suspects.
That is great.
Yes,
that's exactly
a
good one.
It felt on that level. That's the problem.
Yeah. So you think it's Hemsworth, maybe. You think it's Agent C, maybe. You think it could even be.
But you don't.
Like,
right, no,
anyone
sure,
over the
gonna...
age of however old
right.
your son is is going to be like, there's no way they're making Chris Hemsworth the villain.
No.
Like, that's just a non-starter.
And they're showing you that C's the villain, so it's not him.
Right, and there's no way they're making Tessa Thompson the villain.
Right.
Like, it's...
You know they're going to pull off the mask, and it's Liam Neeson.
I would have got away with it, too, if it wasn't for those damn kids.
And then, okay, so we know it's him. They go to Paris in the exact same frame as the old... I mean, I know that
it
it's,
is.
Like, filmed
it
the
really
same...
It really is.
They shot them back to
the same,
car
pulls up.
And again, not saying it's not supposed to be Paris, but this is 3 years apart in the movie. Like, it is the same setting.
Right.
But now, the part that I was really not clear about here is, so like that was High T, like they didn't take over his body, he was assimilated for them, or they combined with him. I was really confused on what actually happened.
So for the most part, it was he was a hive agent basically.
Okay.
So there, but there was a little
bit
of
memory was still from before. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I figure in these movies, and I mean, usually in these monster movies or when someone takes over, you just take their form, right?
Right.
Look at the
Dark Phoenix,
these astral guys just take over their bodies. Like, but for whatever reason, and of course, this is the only reason that this movie ends with a happy ending,
right?
Is that he was still in there. Like, why? This never happens to anybody else.
No.
Except for when you need to have a little bit of T left in there.
Right.
So you can look at his eyes when you're about to die and go, remember me, T. Remember, you had faith in me.
You treated me like a son.
You
were like a father to me.
It's so cheap of an excuse when literally no other alien we've seen.
Which is just so weird because, like, at the end of the first Men in Black, like, they're just shooting at Edgar. Like, there's no
humanity. Is Johnny Knoxville the bad guy?
That's season two.
In two. Okay,
yeah, Knoxville's the bad guy in two. Laura Flynn Boyle is the bad guy in two, but Knoxville's like her.
Got it.
So they go up to the top, and this is where Tessa Thompson's like, tell me exactly how you beat this thing last time. And he was like, with just my wits and my Series 7 deatomizer. He's like, she goes, right.
But tell me exactly what happened.
And he was like, and they can't remember.
Yeah.
Then he realizes he's been neuralized, so he doesn't really know what happened. And to their credit, they don't show us what happened. So like the, something had to happen up there where Liam Neeson got taken over by the Hive, but yeah, we had no clue what it was.
To presume they
to right. their credit or to their budget's credit.
Budget's credit.
Yeah, like
yeah,
I,
that's fair.
I don't think that was like a decision the filmmaker made. I think that was a decision the accountants yeah, made.
That's right. That's probably a good idea. So they're a big fight in the, you know, big CG monster.
Yeah, it's boring.
Whatever.
Just a bunch of
it is what it is.
Whatever.
Tessa Thompson shoots the star gun into the portal that we see earlier.
I guess it sends the blast right up to the Hive.
Oh, I guess like, we should say that like she gets knocked into the portal. Pawnee jumps into the
yeah,
portal after
the and, little alien yeah. that Kumail Nanjiani
saves her.
Yeah,
you
saves
know?
The day, which ends up being funny. His line again, like most of the funny lines are his.
Right
when he's like, "I saved your life.
I saved your life." Yeah. Like I, you know, so she.
I know it's
the,
frustrating that like he's so funny in this movie, but because he's voicing a character like the average
oh, sure.
film goer, like it can't help make him more famous.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, it doesn't, you know, like the average yeah. film goer isn't like, hey, that guy's funny.
Do
I want
to
see his next movie.
Do you think that Stuber is like the, it's going to help?
Oh, yet to be determined. If it's funny, it
yeah.
will, but.
I don't know. I mean, the trailer looks funny, but. It,
big, I haven't seen I the trailer. I have no idea what you're talking
so
about.
So Stuber is, it's Dave Bautista where he plays, it somehow. He and Kumail Nanjiani is a.
This is Deadpool. This is the premise of Deadpool.
Basically.
With. Indian cab driver. He's a
Uber driver,
and then a cop, which,
played by Big,
not
Dave.
Deadpool, but Batista's a cop, and he commandeers the Uber to have him take him on missions,
oh, okay.
crimes,
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah,
which looks,
so.
I mean, whatever.
But they just took the premise of
and just
Deadpool
made it one long movie,
and
yeah,
we'll see.
So it doesn't seem exactly original, but it,
nah,
it,
I mean, what's
it,
original at this point?
Hey, you know, and a lot of times those unoriginal ideas, and I mean, Wayne's World. I mean, I remember when Wayne's World started popping up on SNL, and I was just like. Well, this is just Bill and Ted.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or Strange Brew.
Yeah. But then it was funny and it was like, yeah. oh, okay. Well, it's funny,
yeah.
I guess.
Not
so,
to say this couldn't be bad. Yeah. It's just weird because they're like, Deadpool's so fresh in our minds. So
yeah.
Like this premise is. Oh.
Yeah. And then, but, I mean, Dave's trying to make his bones.
I like him.
So
and I like Kumail Nanjiani. So.
Yeah. So it'll be fun.
Yeah.
So they, Tessa Thompson shoots the gun into the portal. Everything blows up. Woohoo. Everybody wins.
Yeah. Hemsworth's about to die, but then he's like, "Hi, T. Remember, you were like a dad to me, or whatever." And he's like, "Get away, quick!" And whatever. Yeah.
Wow, it was like I was watching the movie.
Yeah. Amazing.
It was such. Yeah. It was such a detailed.
Very
oh, right, right.
Get recreation.
Away. Very exciting.
Yeah.
So the thing closes, and the
everything wins.
Hybrid.
O shows back. M O.
Which one's that?
Emma Thompson.
I think it's O.
Okay. Shows back up and says, "Hey, I put you here for a reason. Like you were here to figure this whole thing out." And then
I trusted this all to a rookie.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
yeah,
like who's been on the job for
a rookie
10 minutes.
I wasn't
maybe.
Even sure if I should neuralize or not.
Yeah. You've been on the job for about 3 days.
Yeah.
Good job. And then
she makes is it H? Is Hemsworth H?
Yeah.
She makes
name is,
H.
Which is weird, like, do we ever know Tommy Lee Jones's real name? Did they ever say his name?
I don't remember.
Do they ever say Will Smith's name?
I really have no.
Oh, yeah, I have no clue.
But what I'm saying is, like, it's J and K.
Well, you're not supposed to tell each other, and that's what they allude to in their conversation. Because Hemsworth's like, "You want to know what my real name is?" She's like, "No, we're not supposed to say
right.
that."
And he was like, "Horatio."
Yeah, so
he's
it,
like, "No, I'm just kidding. It's Henry."
But so no, they don't because it's you're not supposed to.
Right.
Know.
It's Henry and Molly is what these two are.
But
so
she makes H the probationary director of MIB UK,
right.
And then she upgrades Tessa Thompson to full agent.
Right.
And
then
she goes back to the U.S. Like, because the one thing they do that is kind of surprising is you think, like, oh, well, they're going to work together, and they seem like they
yeah.
might have a relationship blossoming. But I do like that it's like, okay, yeah, you got sent
you gotta,
from the U.S.,
you gotta go
now
back
you're
to New
going
York.
Back, and he's here in the U.K. So that was kind of cool. I like it because it didn't fall into the romantic tropes that we usually
right.
see. That you can have a male and female MIB agent and it doesn't have to turn
romantic. I think they were hedging their bets. They definitely
yes,
alluded
absolutely.
To it, but it wasn't overtly romantic.
Yeah.
Like it could have just been their friends.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean,
exactly.
I think there was a chemistry or a tension or whatever. It was there, but at the end of the day, that's not what they were setting it up for. And I
no.
think that's cool because, again, you don't always have to have that. There's no reason why it's like automatically, well, yeah, well, one partner's a male, one's a female. Of course they hook up.
Of course.
Like,
right.
That's a trope we've seen in movies, but it doesn't have to be. And
right.
I like that they didn't go with the convention.
Yeah.
I concur. I just don't believe that long term that was their goal.
Nope.
Yeah.
I just think they didn't get to it in this.
It's funny because they do that same trope with the gal from Dogma.
Rosario Dawson?
No.
Which one?
Oh,
she was in Clerks 2.
The main one? The comedian? Yes,
Linda. Oh. She was the autopsy, the doctor in the first movie, in the first Men in Black movie. Linda Florentino.
Oh, okay. No, that's a person.
Okay, so she's in the first movie, and they hint at a romantic relationship between her and
Jay. Okay, oh, okay.
And then it's completely thrown away because by the second movie.
Gotcha.
Because I guess that she wanted too much. She thought she was the... She pulled a Crispin Glover and thought she was the star of that movie. And they're like, no.
You set it up for me to have the relationship. You got to bring me back.
I think what they did here was they set up for two Men in Black franchises. It's like she goes back to the U.S. Now she can have a new partner. That. Hemsworth, when he's available, can make his MIB movie. I think they set them their separate ways so that they could.
Yeah, that's an interesting theory and a very ballsy one on the part of the studio.
That's the only thing I can think of because they set them up as partners and they work so well together. I mean, we've seen them in Thor. Like, you know, those two are good together.
Right.
So,
I mean, they could easily come up with a plot device that would bring them back.
He can go to the U.S. now. Yeah. I mean, there's...
But that is an interesting theory that their goal was to split them up.
And do two separate
franchises. Two parallel
franchises. I just feel like for some reason they thought this franchise was going to reignite and set the world ablaze. And I don't know why they thought that, but in my mind, it's like they didn't bring it back just for this one movie. Like,
right.
No, it's not a...
They want a franchise, and I think they set up the American and the British versions.
MIB agents.
And you could have all sorts of different spinoffs if it worked.
But it didn't.
But it did not.
So
here we are.
Financially, that's a flop.
Yeah. And I was telling Joe...
Well, the budget's on the high end is 110. Which isn't a lot for a movie like this.
No, that's true.
So I know that it really massively underperformed, but worldwide, it doesn't have to do much.
A good point.
To dig its way out.
Yeah.
You can probably make 200 worldwide.
Yeah, like I don't
break even.
Yeah, like I don't think it will do enough worldwide to justify more of them, but I think that they're not going to get hurt.
That's probably true.
Because that's a very low budget for a movie like this.
And I mean, the last one was when that last one come out?
2012.
That's a long time.
And it does feel like we're in an entirely different landscape for movies and franchises.
Big time.
But I'm really just surprised that they tried to redo this with no Will Smith.
Yeah, that's a bold move.
They thought what we questioned earlier. They had Thor and they had Valkyrie from the Thor movies, who now is spoilers for Endgame, which you've seen if you're listening to this.
She's the king of Asgard.
She's the head of... I mean, so like you've got two stars there in their mind.
Yeah.
They can sell a movie, and it's like people weren't showing up for it.
Nope. And that's the thing is like it's gotten to the point now where, sure, you slap that Marvel Studios banner on something at this point, you're going to make $100 mil easy.
But this didn't have Marvel.
That and Star Wars are the only two where you can slap that franchise banner on something and you're going to make at least 80, you know, given what Solo did. You know what I mean? Like,
Hollywood just needs to let franchises rest. They need to just stop this. You know, like,
well,
it's okay.
When you're throwing hundreds of millions of dollars at something, you want a safe bet. You don't want to throw that at a new... I mean, because look at when they've tried to launch that. Look at, you know, John Carter of Mars, or what was that?
Which I still like.
That's a good movie.
What was...
Cowboys and Aliens?
The Tom
Cowboys
Cruise and one, Ali- Oblivion?
No, that what oh. was that one where it was like, was it last summer or two summers ago? Where it was, it was like two names, and it was like a guy and a girl on a planet, Flipper to Do, and whatchamacallit.
Oh, Valerian.
There we go.
That's right. That was Dale DeHaan and Carla.
Dane DeHaan.
Yeah. Dane DeHaan and...
But yeah, like, Cara, I mean...
Huntress.
Cara Delevingne?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, you thought, Empress. Like, they were like, oh, we're going to launch a new franchise.
Yeah.
Nope.
But the thing that sucks is that, and there have been many articles on this, but the mid-budget movie is dead. You either have Art House and it makes 100 times its budget, or you have a $200 million dollar movie and it either makes $0 or it makes $10 billion. You know, it's like they need to start making mid-tier movies.
You don't see a $40 or $50 million movie anymore.
Oh,
or
that's
rarely.
True. Blumhouse, but that's on the low end.
That's the low end.
That's what I'm saying. But I wouldn't consider those Art House, though. Like, that's...
Okay,
but most of the
art house
movies
budget.
Are art house.
Sure, yeah.
Most
absolutely.
Are art house,
and
it either gets all these awards and people go see it for months.
Wick?
And but I mean, the first one worked. It was lucky and it found a life, and then it got kind of bumped up.
Sure,
But that's the exception to the rule. The point is, they make Men in Black, they make Godzilla, they make it's just $200 million movies,
right?
And then it's A24 movies, right? Yep. You know, you know, because they're one of my favorites. There's other studios, but it's Amazon and A24, and you know, all the smaller studios, and it's like, the mid-budget movie has died, but those are the movies where they can take risks, but they're not huge risks.
Right.
That's where you find new filmmakers. That's where you find them.
Find them at the art house.
Yeah.
Like, but
you don't trust them with 50. You trust them with 2.
Well, you trust them with 2, and then you'd be like, okay, that worked.
They graduate.
Let's move you up to the 50.
But now it's not gradual.
No.
You trust them with 2, and if it works, you trust them with 200.
Yeah.
I mean,
ask Colin Trevorrow.
And that's...
Josh Trank,
yeah,
or
that's a great point.
The guy that directed Godzilla, one we just saw.
Oh,
the had done Krampus. He went from Krampus to Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
That's what they do. And
Krampus wasn't even a hit.
No, that's what really mystifies me.
But the main thing, the problem is that it worked so many times that they keep doing it. But now they're like, okay, we have a property. And I think some of this problem might be because of Marvel. And I'm not saying it's Marvel's problem because it works for them.
Right.
But Marvel took all these people.
Yep.
And we're just like, they give them a movie because they have a genre.
Right.
You know, and a lot of them were still proven, but they weren't making blockbusters.
Right.
And they're like, we'll have them do this because they fit. And then all of a sudden... they're making these, you know, $1.5 billion movies, and especially the case of the Russos, who seem pretty untested for that kind of stuff. And so they see it work. They see Safety Not Guaranteed with Trevorrow.
Yep.
And then he made Jurassic World the highest grossing domestic movie of all time until Star Wars beat it.
Right.
So it worked. And then they're like, okay, well, we have a property, Men in Black, I'll use for this example, that sells itself, you know? And I know F. Gary Gray's done stuff, but they didn't care. They're like, this is Men in Black. People will show up.
Yeah, right. You can't screw that up.
Yeah, you can't screw, you know? And so I guess instead of the director, but I wouldn't call him an A-list director, but instead of him being the problem.
He's coming off Fast and Furious.
Right.
But he's not an above the title
but
director.
But he's not a Spielberg.
Absolutely not.
I mean,
no, totally.
Only film nerds know F. Gary Gray. Right. Otherwise, they know his work. But instead of him being the problem, I think it was Hemsworth and Thompson. So like, it sells itself. We've got 2 Marvel stars. How could it go wrong?
Yeah.
Right?
And for $110 million, nobody's going to get hurt.
We're not going to get hurt.
And they
this.
Still might not get hurt, but they, you know, I think they were hedging their bets with the budget. And the problem with this movie is not budgetary.
No.
No.
More money would not have made this a better movie.
Nope. So it was all content.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table and everybody can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. And you can find the show online at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. Don't forget our Patreon account at Patreon.com/Real Spoilers. So that's it for this one. Coming up next week, it will be Toy Story 4. Don't know what else comes out, but I know it won't be bigger than Toy Story 4.
And a movie.
I've seen it, and it's fantastic. The embargo was up last Wednesday. So
there we go. So
there it is.
I have not seen it yet, so I cannot say if that's true or not.
Neither can I.
So, but anyway, that's what you have to look forward to. So thanks for tuning in, and until next time, Proctor adds 53 years to Roy's term. Here come the MIBs. Here come the men in black. They won't let you remember. Nah. The good guys dress in black. Remember that, just in case we ever face to face and make contact. The title held by me, MIB, means what you think you saw, you did not see. Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.